Speaking of kings, Donald Trump. Simon Marks is here, LBC's Washington correspondent. Donald Trump insists he does not want to be a king. A lot of people in America are not convinced. We'll come on to that in a few minutes. But this stuff with Trump and Putin, to say Trump is blowing hot and cold about Donald Putin is an understatement, isn't it?
We're all over the map. It was only last Friday that he announced that he was going to rush into another summit meeting with Vladimir Putin. They were going to meet in Budapest, in Hungary. The Hungarian Prime Minister, Viktor Orban, absolutely publicly confirmed that they were coming, hadn't set a final date, but was ready to receive them. President Trump saying that they had selected Hungary and Viktor Orban because both he and Vladimir Putin like Viktor Orban and his brand of authoritarianism in Hungary. And that, of course, looked like very bad news for Volodymyr Zelensky, who only the previous day had been in for another drubbing at the hands of Donald Trump off camera, this time at the White House, with Trump reportedly throwing maps of Ukraine that the Ukrainian leader had brought with him to show where the red line is currently that separates Russian from Ukrainian forces, throwing them to one side and saying that he was sick of looking at these maps. So it looked very much last Friday as though the Donald Trump who was refusing to give Volodymyr Zelensky Tomahawk missiles was back in Putin's corner. They'd had a 2.5-hour phone conversation the day before Zelensky arrived. Then it all falls apart again, and we fast forward to yesterday with Donald Trump finally, for the first time since he returned to the White House, imposing fresh sanctions on the Russians directly. Remember, they've talked about these secondary sanctions. They've already put some in place against the Indians, a tariff on their use of Russian oil. They've threatened secondary sanctions on China, but never direct sanctions on Russia. And then we suddenly discover yesterday, Rosneft and Lukoil, the two largest oil companies in Russia, now being sanctioned by the United States. Which does beg the question, how is it possible that we lived through the Biden administration and that they weren't sanctioned then, but now they are sanctioned? These sanctions are going to have some impact on them. They won't be able to engage in any transactions that touch the American financial system. If they've got properties and assets in the United States, they will be frozen. I'm very interested to see what that means for Lukoil's petrol stations, because they have petrol stations on the eastern seaboard in Philadelphia and up in New York. In fact, if you drive from Washington to New York, you go straight up Interstate 95, and as you arrive on the lip of New York, there's a Lukoil gas station right there. So I don't know if they're
done that journey a lot, have you?
Yeah, once or twice.
A man who can name the petrol stations of the US. It's pretty impressive.
And always managed to avoid spending my cash at the Lukoil one.
Did you?
But one wonders if it's still open for business or not today. So I don't know where all this goes. Does this newfound zeal to criticise Vladimir Putin last 15 minutes? Does it go a week?
I think there are parallels here with Israel and Gaza, with his approach to that, which blew hot and cold. One minute he was, washing his hands of Netanyahu. The next minute he was shoulder to shoulder saying he's marvellous. And then it was a silly idea about the Riviera, the Gaza Riviera, naming everything after Trump. And then it was something more substantial that came in the form of the deal, ongoing, and we'll see where that goes. But there are parallels, I think. And with the decision to sanction Russia, we wake up to the news that I think a number of people killed, but certainly children injured.
Yes.
In the latest attack.
In an orphanage, yeah.
In Kharkiv, which is, I think it's fair to say, is Ukraine's second city.
Yes, absolutely.
The equivalent of Birmingham, say. I've actually been to Kharkiv. It's a huge, substantial city.
It's an extraordinary place. It's an extraordinary war memorial there
as
well.
Yeah. It's got all that sort of communist, huge building feel about it, doesn't it? Yeah, well, sadly, some of them have gone. But it's really critical, this, isn't it, for the Ukrainian civilian population?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you saw Volodymyr Zelensky yesterday sort of embracing Donald Trump's new suggestion that they should freeze everything in place where it is now and agree essentially to, as Donald Trump puts it, cut up Ukraine that way. I mean, Zelensky came in for criticism back in Kiev for doing that, but he's really doing it because he knows that Donald Trump is not going to be able to secure Vladimir Putin's agreement even for that. So it's a gambit by Zelensky to try and curry some favour with an American leader with whom he has obviously very tense relationships. What happened to Zelensky last week in the White House is an example of what happens when Volodymyr Zelensky walks into that complex without an entourage of European leaders to protect him. And it was interesting to see yesterday Mark Rutte, the NATO Secretary General, race to Washington, D.C. to try and talk Donald Trump away from Putin's orbit on the day that Trump then announces those sanctions against Russia.
He of the fawning text message.
Absolutely. I mean, Rutte has really, I think, to some extent, shredded his own credibility by fawning over Trump, I think more than any other world leader that we've witnessed,
which
is
needed.
Going some
more
far
than
more than needed. But he's bought himself the ability to have a bit of influence over Donald Trump. And we may have seen that playing out yesterday. I think there's also a bit of influence in this decision to sanction the Russian oil companies from Secretary of State Marco Rubio, because as much as he sits alongside Donald Trump in those Oval Office meetings,
he's got a brain
and sort of sits there very often looking uncomfortable with what he's hearing. I think when he got on the phone with Sergei Lavrov to negotiate the preconditions for the summit meeting between Trump and Putin in Budapest, I think it was essentially Marco Rubio who thought, this is a crazy idea, let's put the boot in.
And I was reminded when we were looking at the papal pictures there of that moment when Trump and Zelensky had that brief private conversation
at the Vatican,
at Francis's funeral. Remember, that was some photograph, wasn't it, of the two of them talking. And that's what I meant when I said that Rome concentrates the mind, because I think it did there, from Trump's perspective in particular. But, you know, I'm just wondering out loud, really, whether it will with
well,
Charles.
Well, that was a huge moment, because it was the first time I think they'd met since Zelensky had received the on-camera drubbing at the White House back in February or March, whenever that was. And it was Zelensky's opportunity to be the Trump whisperer. And we see time and again that Trump listens to the last voice that's in his ear. And on that particular day, Zelensky was able to make some headway with the American president.
And listen, before you go, what's going on with the East Wing? Because my reading of this story, for people who don't know, is it's been bulldozed, the East Wing of the White House. My reading of it has been almost entirely on social media, therefore I don't trust that. It's you hear some voices saying he's just doing a bit of redecorating.
No, he's not.
And other voices saying he is trashing American history.
Absolutely.
It's the latter.
This is the greatest act of cultural vandalism that I think we've witnessed in modern American history. Of course you can refurbish the White House. Of course you can remodel it. It's been done on numerous occasions. Harry Truman saved it from literal collapse in the 1950s by engaging in a very substantial renovation program. Richard Nixon put a bowling alley in. Jimmy Carter put solar panels on the roof of the building. Ronald Reagan then ripped them down when he came into office.
Jackie Kennedy's Rose Garden.
Now paved over by Donald Trump.
I read a quote by Jackie Kennedy in relation to this, which I thought was interesting. It wasn't just about the East Wing, it was about the White House more generally, in which she said she hates the word redecoration about the White House. She says it is about conserving things, and it is about restoring things.
Exactly.
And she said anyone who touches the White House to change it, it should understand, it's a great quote from her, understand that it's an act of scholarship, not redecoration.
Yes, well, this, what we're witnessing, is definitely not an act of scholarship. It is an act of vandalism that is now going to see, he conceded yesterday, the entire East Wing being demolished within the next couple of days.
Yeah.
A building that has been in place since 1902, the haven of successive first ladies. That's where their operations generally are based, although Melania, as you know, doesn't spend very much time at the White House, so she's not going to miss the East Wing. But what distinguishes this from all of the previous efforts to remodel, refurbish, redecorate the White House is that it is being done without permission, without any
consultation
or transparency over who's paying for it.
Thank you very much, Simon. I knew you'd know. Simon Marks, LBC's Washington correspondent.